in the late 20th century, into the sea of space. But they will be human, at least in large part. They will be practitioners of high technology. They will have historical records. Despite Augustine's judgment on Lot's wife, that no one who is being saved should long for what he is leaving, they will not wholly forget the earth. But we're not nearly ready, you may be thinking. As Voltaire put it in his Memnon, our little terraqueous globe is the madhouse of those 100,000 millions of worlds. We, who cannot even put our own planetary home in order, riven with rivalries and hatreds, despoiling our environment, murdering one another through irritation and inattention as well as on deadly purpose, and, moreover, a species that until only recently was convinced that the universe was made for its sole benefit. Are we to venture out into space, move worlds, re-engineer planets, spread to neighboring star systems? I do not imagine that it is precisely we, with our present customs and social conventions, who will be out there. If we continue to accumulate only power and not wisdom, we will surely destroy ourselves. Our very existence in that distant time requires that we will have changed our institutions and ourselves. How can I dare to guess about humans in the far future? It is, I think, only a matter of natural selection. If we become even slightly more violent, short-sighted, ignorant, and selfish than we are now, almost certainly we will have no future. If you're young, it's just possible that we will be taking our first steps on near-Earth asteroids and Mars during your lifetime. To spread out to the moons of the Jovian planets and the Kuiper comet belt will take many generations more. The Oort cloud will require much longer still. By the time we're ready to settle even the nearest other planetary systems, we will have changed. The simple passage of so many generations will have changed us. The different circumstances we will be living under will have changed us. Prostheses and genetic engineering will have changed us. Necessity will have changed us. We're an adaptable species. It will not be we who reach Alpha Centauri and the other nearby stars. It will be a species very like us, but with more of our strengths and fewer of our weaknesses. A species returned to circumstances more like those for which it was originally evolved, more confident, far-seeing, capable, and prudent. The sorts of beings we would want to represent us in a universe that, for all we know, is filled with species much older, much more powerful, and very different. The vast distances that separate the stars are providential. Beings and worlds are quarantined from one another. The quarantine is lifted only for those with sufficient self-knowledge and judgment to have safely traveled from star to star. On immense timescales, in hundreds of millions to billions of years, the centers of galaxies explode. We see, scattered across deep space, galaxies with active nuclei, quasars, galaxies distorted by collisions, their spiral arms disrupted, star systems blasted with radiation or gobbled up by black holes. And we gather that on such timescales, even interstellar space, even galaxies may not be safe. There is a halo of dark matter surrounding the Milky Way, extending perhaps halfway to the distance of the next spiral galaxy. M31 in the constellation Andromeda, which also contains hundreds of billions of stars. We do not know what this dark matter is or how it is arranged, but some of it may be in whirls untethered to individual stars. If so, our descendants of the remote future will have an opportunity, over unimaginable intervals of time, to become established in intergalactic space and to tiptoe to other galaxies. But on the timescale for populating our galaxy, if not long before, we must ask, how immutable is this longing for safety that drives us outward? Will we one day feel content with the time our species has had and our successes and willingly exit the cosmic stage? Millions of years from now, probably much sooner, we will have made ourselves into something else. Even if we do nothing intentionally, the natural process of mutation and selection will have worked our extinction or evolved us into some other species on just such a timescale, if we may judge by other mammals. Over the typical lifetime of a mammalian species, even if we were able to travel close to the speed of light and were dedicated to nothing else, we could not, I think, explore even a representative fraction of the Milky Way galaxy. There's just too much of it. And beyond are 100 billion galaxies more. Will our present motivations remain unchanged over geological, much less cosmological timescales, when we ourselves have been transfigured? In such remote epochs, we may discover outlets for our ambitions far grander and more worthy than merely populating an unlimited number of worlds. Perhaps, some scientists have imagined, we will one day create new forms of life, link minds, colonize stars, reconfigure galaxies, or prevent, in a nearby volume of space, the expansion of the universe. In a 1993 article in the journal Nuclear Physics, the physicist André Lind, conceivably in a playful mood, suggests that laboratory experiments, it would have to be quite a laboratory, to create separate, closed-off, expanding universes might ultimately be possible. However, he writes to me, I myself do not know whether this suggestion is simply a joke or something else. In such a list of projects for the far future, we will have no difficulty in recognizing a continuing human ambition to arrogate powers once considered godlike. Or, in that other, more encouraging metaphor, to complete the creation. For many pages now, we have left the realm of plausible conjecture for the heady intoxication of nearly unconstrained speculation. It is time to return to our own age. My grandfather, born before radio waves were even a laboratory curiosity, almost lived to see the first artificial satellite beeping down at us from space. There are people who were born before there was such a thing as an airplane, and who in old age saw 4 ships launched to the stars. For all our failings, despite our limitations and fallibilities, we humans are capable of greatness. This is true of our science and some areas of our technology, of our art, music, literature, altruism, and compassion, and even, on rare occasion, of our statecraft. What new wonders, undreamt of in our time, will we have wrought in another generation and another? How far will our nomadic species have wandered by the end of the next century and the next millennium? 2 billion years ago, our ancestors were microbes. 500 million years ago, fish. 100 million years ago, something like mice. 10 million years ago, arboreal apes. And 1 million years ago, proto-humans puzzling out the taming of fire. Our evolutionary lineage is marked by mastery of change. In our time, the pace is quickening. When we first venture to a near-Earth asteroid, we will have entered a habitat that may engage our species forever. The first voyage of men and women to Mars is the key step in transforming us into a multi-planet species. These events are as momentous as the colonization of the land by our amphibian ancestors and the descent from the trees by our primate ancestors. Fish with rudimentary lungs and fins, slightly adapted for walking, must have died in great numbers before establishing a permanent foothold on the land. As the forests slowly receded, our upright ape-like forebears often scurried back into the trees, fleeing the predators that stalked the savannas. The transitions were painful, took millions of years, and were imperceptible to those involved. In our case, the transition occupies only a few generations, and with only a handful of lives lost. The pace is so swift that we are still barely able to grasp what is happening. Once the first children are born off Earth, once we have bases and homesteads on asteroids, comets, moons, and planets, once we're living off the land and bringing up new generations on other worlds, something will have changed forever in human history. But inhabiting other worlds does not imply abandoning this one any more than the evolution of amphibians meant the end of fish. For a very long time, only a small fraction of us will be out there. In modern Western society, writes the scholar Charles Lindholm, the erosion of tradition and the collapse of accepted religious belief leaves us without a telos, an end to which we strive, a sanctified notion of humanity's potential. Bereft of a sacred project, we have only a demystified image of a frail and fallible humanity, no longer capable of becoming godlike. I believe it is healthy, indeed essential, to keep our frailty and fallibility firmly in mind. I worry about people who aspire to be godlike. But as for a long-term goal and a sacred project, there is one before us. On it, the very survival of our species depends. If we have been locked and bolted into a prison of the self, here is an escape hatch, something worthy, something vastly larger than ourselves, a crucial act on behalf of humanity. Peopling other worlds unifies nations and ethnic groups, binds the generations, and requires us to be both smart and wise. It liberates our nature and, in part, returns us to our beginnings. Even now, this new telos is within our grasp. The pioneering psychologist William James called religion a feeling of being at home in the universe. Our tendency has been, as I described in the early chapters of this book, to pretend that the universe is how we wish our home would be, rather than to revise our notion of what's homey so it embraces the universe. If, in considering James' definition, we mean the real universe, then we have no true religion yet. That is for another time, when the sting of the great demotions is well behind us, when we are acclimatized to other worlds and they to us, when we are spreading outward to the stars. The cosmos extends, for all practical purposes, forever. After a brief sedentary hiatus, we are resuming our ancient nomadic way of life. Our remote descendants, safely arrayed on many worlds through the solar system and beyond, will be unified by their common heritage, by their regard for their home planet, and by the knowledge that, whatever other life may be, the only humans in all the universe come from Earth. They will gaze up and strain to find the pale blue dot in their skies. They will love it no less for its obscurity and fragility. They will marvel at how vulnerable the repository of all our potential once was, how perilous our infancy, how humble our beginnings, how many rivers we had to cross before we found our way.
We hope you have enjoyed our presentation of Pale Blue Dot, A Vision of the Human Future in Space by Carl Sagan, performed by Carl Sagan and Anne Drian, directed by Sarah Bozell. Performance copyright 2017 by Brilliance Publishing Incorporated, all rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance audio titles, call the following toll-free number, 1-800-222-3225, or visit our website at brillianceaudio.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Kindly address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio. P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.